Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. You're on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That is what it is all about. That is my message to you. It really is possible to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to join me today in the studio, the number is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. Because here's the thing, when it comes to binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what's eating at you. It's not what you're eating that is the true problem. It is what's eating at you. It is why you're eating. And that's what we're here to, when I say we, I mean the royal we, that's what I am here to help you with. So whatever is bothering you, whatever is going on, whatever is troubling you, causing anxiety, making you mad, anything that is going on with you, let's hear from you. Call me and let's work it through so that you can talk it out instead of stuff it down. Okay, so I have a couple of messages, questions from people I'm going to answer. One is from Maya. She says, I'm not sure if this question makes sense, but what does it mean when you switch from binging to purging? Is there some sort of correlation or reason behind switching from one way of disordered eating to another? That is a great question, Maya. And by the way, it is very common that people switch for, or you know, not switch, but I guess kind of evolve from one to another to another. When I was struggling with eating disorders, when back in the day when I was the poster child for eating disorder, I nearly spilled my tea all over my computer. That would not have gone well. Okay, let me get rid of my tea. Okay, when I was the poster child for eating disorders, I would go from restricting to binging and purging to restricting and so on. So it is a very good question, Maya. And of course, everyone does this for different reasons because people develop eating disorders for reasons that are as unique as they are. But let me give you some thoughts. One is that purging, if we look at it symbolically, purging is getting rid of something. So binging can be a way of, you know, sort of stuffing something down, pushing it down, putting yourself in a state where you are converting emotional pain to physical pain. If you're eating so much that you know it hurts, you're likely converting emotional pain to physical pain. Binging is also a way of creating kind of a sleepy kind of it's a way of dealing with anxiety, and you end up feeling kind of sleepy and not motivated, and it's a way of relaxing in a sense. So binging can mean a lot of different things to different people. Purging, however, when you then decide to purge what you've just binged on, or whether you're purging without binging, that is about getting rid of something. It could be about cleaning yourself out symbolically. People tell me that they feel so clean after they get rid of food. So like getting rid of the messy thoughts and feelings that you have when you purge, whether you're throwing up or using laxatives or whatever, it's this idea that you're getting rid of something within you, that food that you're getting rid of represents something. It represents messy, dirty, yucky, gross thoughts, feelings, ideas, and so forth. So Maya, I would be curious as to what your thoughts would be about that, know, what are you trying to get rid of by purging? What is it that you can't hold inside? What is it that's unbearable that you have to get rid of? That's what purging is about. I hope that helps. I also have a question from Regan. She wants to know how to manage expectations. She said, how do I manage expectations or get rid of them, both with yourself and with others? When I don't live up to an expectation I have of myself, I tend to use my critical voice. When others disappoint my expectation, I use the critical voice on myself as well. Should expectations be eliminated? How? What goes in place of expectations? Okay, this is a really great question that I think a lot can relate to. Change the word expectations to ideas, fantasies. Often we have ideas about how we should be, where we should be in life. And notice I'm using the word should. So when these ideas, whether you call them expectations or ideas or thoughts, have an embedded should in them. I should be a certain place in my life. I should have handled this situation in a different way. That person should have related to me differently. That person should be doing something differently. A lot of shoulds involved. And you know what I say about shoulds, not just me, but lots of people. Don't should on yourself. Don't should on yourself. When you have an expectation or let's call it a fantasy of how things ought to be, idea of how they should be, because it's a fantasy, and in a fantasy, everything is perfect. You know, when you think, oh, I'm going to write a book, that book, when it's in your mind, when you have an expectation of how you can create it, it's a perfect book. It's brilliant. It's perfect. It's amazing when it lives in your mind. And then, of course, the reality is it's flawed. It's not perfect. It's not how you expected it to be, because the expectation is it should be some kind of fantasy book. Fantasy and reality are two different things. And when we fail to live up to our fantasy because we're living in the world of reality, that is setting up this idea that you've failed to be in some way perfectly living up to your fantasy. So Regan, what I would say is look at these expectations. Is there some expectations that are realistic? When you are crying and you talk to someone, you have an expectation that that person is going to say, hey, are you okay? What's going on? That is a reasonable expectation. But when you have an expectation that you should, I'm trying to think of things that people have said to me. Well, they've said to me, well, I'm 40 years old and I should be at this level in life and I'm not, so I failed. Well, then that is not an expectation. That is a fantasy idea of where you think you should be in your life and calling yourself a failure rather than, okay, everything that has happened in my life has brought me to the point where I am today. And if I don't like it, I'm going to take a look at my life and figure out how I want to change things rather than beat yourself up because you're not at some place that you think you should be. Maybe you don't even want to be there. And it's also interesting that Regan says she uses the critical voice on herself too, that when she is disappointed with others, she uses the critical voice on herself. And I hear this a lot. When other people disappoint you, when other people disappoint them, they say, I should have known better. And so then you attack yourself for not being psychic, for not being omniscient, which is all-knowing. And I should have known better rather than this person disappointed me. This person did not live up to my expectations. This person upset me and I have every right to be upset. Whatever the situation is, I get to be upset, not mad at myself because I had an expectation and someone else failed me. then you take your upset feelings towards the people, the person or people who upset you, and you just put them on yourself. Now, how is that fair? So should expectations be eliminated? I guess that depends on how you define the word, Regan. You can have realistic expectations of a certain kind of responsiveness or behavior of yourself and other people. When I say reasonable, when you're talking about an outcome that you expect yourself to create an outcome in the future that you have only so much control over, then it's not appropriate to have that expectation. It's not appropriate, for example, to say, well, I'm going to write this book and then I expect that it will be a bestseller. That's my expectation. I'm going to make it a bestseller. I'm exaggerating this for the purpose of my point, but because if it's not a bestseller, then you feel like you're a failure. But if you say, I'm going to write the best book that I can write and I'm going to put it out there and I'm going to do everything that I can to get it to as many people as possible with the hopes that people can benefit from it, that's a reasonable expectation. But the outcome of I should sell a certain number or I should be at a certain level of life, which, that's shooting on yourself. So a lot of this is semantics. And again, how does this pertain to weight and food and all of that? If you feel bad about yourself because you're not living up to your unrealistic expectations and you're really good at being critical of yourself, then when you feel bad, let me just finish this thought and then we're going to get to a caller. Can you turn off your radio? Because I can hear myself a couple seconds ago. When you are critical of yourself and you don't know how to be supportive and kind and loving to yourself, then what's going to happen? How are you going to comfort yourself? How are you going to feel better to get away from your inner critic? You're going to eat. So that is, those are my thoughts on expectations and managing expectations and why other words should be used instead of the word expectations. And as always, cultivating a kinder, more nicer, I guess, just a kinder, nicer approach to yourself is always going to help more than eating is. Okay, caller, welcome. You're on with Dr. Nina. Hello?
Good morning, Dr. Nina. This is Carly Gash.
Good morning, Carly Gash. How are you doing?
Well, it's a very interesting question. I'm doing very different almost every moment of my day. So I've been binging, last week I've been diagnosed with Lyme disease. Most probably it's a chronic one. Most probably I got it when I was a kid. But this last year my symptoms significantly deteriorated. I'm really scared for my health, life, and well-being. So I've been binging the whole week uncontrollably. And you were helping me so much. But I was in this, I couldn't even unstuck, you know what I mean? And I binged to the point that everything hurt and I was converting emotional pain and fear into physical pain. And on top of that, I just got psychologically separated from my mom and my biological father died. So, but I want to say thank you to you. I'm so grateful that this psychological separation was so timely, as I don't know how I could be doing right now if I didn't have this one sorted out, honestly, in my life. So I talked to my mom, and it's no longer the same. I didn't expect anything from her, and I just understood she will never be the mother. The classical motherhood cares and does everything. Most probably she gave me Lyme disease, and she never actually even checked that I could is sick or something, because it was obvious. If I was a mom, I would notice the behavior change and energy level in my kid. But since she was not taking good care of me, psychologically, psychoanalytically, I believe that subconscious knows everything. It's just we choose to ignore, or we choose because it's convenient or whatever. The good part is that, yes, it hurts. Yes, it sucks. It's unfair. It's a big pain, hole, broken heart of mine. But I processed it, so I feel more settled in this question. Now, coming back to Lyme disease, I just talked to one clinic, which seems to be like good in treating it. And just initial cost, just to do 8 to 12 weeks of first initial treatment, is $65,000 out of pocket. No insurance covered, because Lyme is very politicized in the U.S. So the guidelines are written so the insurance pays only for 1 month of treatment, and it's not enough for a chronic Lyme patient. It's basically leaving a person disabled and like waiting until it just naturally deteriorates and just fails and dies. So, but this is how it is. This is what is.
Carly Gash, I'm actually, please contact me separately. Let's talk separately, because I actually have a functional medicine doctor who might be able to help and will certainly not be $65,000. I'm very glad that you are able to recognize that this kind of desperate binging that you've been doing, which you hadn't been doing before, was a way of expressing the emptiness inside, the pain inside, and the presence of the absence. And that relates to the emptiness. When there is a presence of, when you can discern what isn't there, if that makes sense, the presence of the absence, it is to see what you are missing, to know what you are missing, is beyond painful. And that is what you got in touch with two parents at the same time, one living, one dead, plus this diagnosis, a time when we need parents more than ever. When you have a scary diagnosis like that, that's when you need some comfort, some parents, someone saying, oh my goodness, it's terrible and it's going to be okay, but this is awful and I'm so sorry. That's when we need it the most. So all of this was this perfect, horrible storm for you. Your solution was binging, which expressed a lot of different things. But as you're working through the pain, working through what's missing, with the true source of what's going on.
Yeah, that totally works. Your approach works. Your approach is the only thing which works, honestly. So I not only I was binging because it was a presence of an absence, I just all of a sudden realized that I had it since I was a kid. That's why life was so hard for me, but I was still pulling it out and even being better than average. My mom never cared, like any family member never cared about me. And it's still like this, nothing changes. And on top of that, I'm practically not in the same game with like other people, meaning that I have Lyme and it's chronic and it's not recognized here. So it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a long-lasting battle and pushing my head from time to time. It's not that you are not doing it good. It's just me taking in as much as I can, provided that everything is broken inside and not working properly, that all these mechanisms of support and everything. But I'm building them. And
Carly Gash,
I hear you.
Carly Gash, may I also make a suggestion? Just a very practical suggestion. Join a support group for people who have Lyme disease.
Thank you very much. Sure, I will definitely join everything. Like I'm in active position. I'm like, I already followed all Instagram possible pages online. I watched the movie about Lyme disease. This is how I knew what the situation in the country is with the disease. I'm talking to Russian doctors, like CIS countries, Kazakhstan, Russian, because whatever is considered here aggressive antibiotic protocol in our country, it's called just treatment. You know, I've got already so many antibiotics in my life anyways for Lyme symptoms. So is different. I'm very active. Like, I'm searching the whole world. If necessary, I'll go to Africa. If necessary, I go to Iceland. Whoever can help me, and I will do everything. So I'm not giving up. I'm very active about it. So thank you for your suggestion. I will definitely go look for it. And I will definitely join.
I think you need to be talking with other people who are going through the same things, sharing experiences. But like I said, I'm going to get you the name of the functional medicine doctor who I have a feeling can help you a lot. I just want to say something else about what you were saying about your family, that you essentially have always been the outsider in your family, the scapegoat, if you will. And
it's not even a scapegoat. At least a scapegoat is someone who belongs to family. But I felt that the whole message is from everything is like vanish, disappear. You don't even exist thing.
Carly Gash, no. The scapegoat is the one who is blamed for things or ignored a scapegoat is someone who is, you're not like us. You're different from us. If there's a problem, it's your fault. You're on your own. So
in my case, it was even like the messages were kind of vanish, disappear, you don't even exist type of thing.
Yes.
So it was like this. You know, it's not like you are not like us. When you say you are not like me, it's at least some conversation involved, form of interaction. Even
Carly
if
Gash.
It's negative. In my case, it's like...
Carly Gash, it's not said explicitly. When I say that, it's the message. Nobody says... I mean, sometimes they do. You're not like us, but it's the way someone is treated, and it's the message is you're not one of us. You don't matter. You're too much. You're not enough. These are the messages that the scapegoat of the family gets. In therapy, it's called the identified patient, the IP, which is a stupid word, but it basically means the scapegoat, and the person who is scapegoated is made to feel that there's something, you know, there's something wrong with them because they're not treated the same as the family. But the family does it to feel better about themselves. They collude to say, oh, we are together. She's the problem. It gives them a cohesiveness and it makes them feel better about their lives if you're the problem. And the scapegoat is nearly always the truth that nobody else wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
Scapegoat is the one who is reflective and bright and recognizes what's going on that nobody else wants to recognize. And there's the scapegoat is often not bringing it back to the sense of not being parented by your own parents, by your own mother, because she's the only parent you had. The scapegoat doesn't learn to depend on other people for comfort. But she learns, or he, that the only comfort comes from within. Only you can take care of you. And you can't rely on other people. And food is one way of managing that.
Yeah.
So is Jenny, who's also a frequent caller, and her rosé, right? She couldn't depend on her parents, so she depends on rosé to soothe her. So I just want to normalize why you're turning to food because of this, the way that the family was set up.
It makes total sense. I actually repeated the same scapegoat situation in my life with all the companies I worked for. The co-worker situation, same thing. And also, I was part of Bachelor Show in Kazakhstan, same situation. Like when they collude against like the scapegoat, whatever, truth holder, truth keeper. This is so interesting how I was recreating my family situation in my life. Practically, it's like, oh my God, it's like a bad dream, which I was like dreaming and dreaming again and again. But
that's what we do. That's what we humans do. It's called repetition compulsion. And basically what it means is what you don't heal and you don't resolve, you repeat. And at work, or in different situations like that, we fall into that pattern. We experience our bosses as parents, siblings, co-workers, our siblings in our psyche. It's not like we're consciously thinking that, but because we experience the people outside of our family as our family, or tolerate certain dynamics that you shouldn't tolerate. If someone is mean and rejecting to you in your own family, then someone who's mean and rejecting to you outside your family is going to feel like someone who knows you really well, and you're going to tolerate it. But when you are no longer tolerant of mean, rejecting people, you're going to find people are going to treat you well. So this repetition compulsion, again, these names are also archaic, but that is what all of us do. We repeat the past until we heal it, and then we change.
But I think you heal it only if you put your consciousness to it, and like you really make a go to understand and see and bring from subconscious to conscious and normalize things. I think if you just repeat it, I don't think it's possible to resolve it, because I've been repeating it and nothing.
That's the point. It will keep repeating until you heal the past, until you actively heal the past. It will just keep going over and over and over and over. Yeah, you have to heal that past actively. The repetition does not heal anything. It just repeats it. You just find yourself feeling terrible all the time. The past, you no longer repeat those patterns because they're familiar, or because you're hoping for a different outcome from familiar people.
Thank you so, so much, Dr. Nina. Well, you are a gold keeper, and you give and you share this gold with us generously for free. And like, really, the universe bless you and give you everything what you want, because you really give like a real working shortcut to progress and treatment and life. It's just so precious. Thank you.
Thank you. But I want to challenge you a little bit, because I've noticed every week you say something very sweet to me, something along these lines. And I appreciate
because this
your
is how attitude. I feel.
I know, and I appreciate it so much. What would happen if you took that appreciation that you have for me and what I'm sharing with you and how I'm helping you? What if you took that sense of appreciation and turned it towards yourself? What would happen if you start looking within for what you appreciate about you?
Dr. Nina, sometimes I have these two modes. I'm either all bad, like my family treated me, but when I don't think how my family treats me, I actually think very good about myself. I say, Carly, gosh, look at you. Who in your situation going through this all hardness will come out actually like this? Because many people who heard story in my life, they said, you were supposed to end up a drug addict or kill yourself, you know? But you were making it and you're like even succeeding. So I'm like, I'm actually doing so good. And I've been always like that. I feel good about myself. And as a kid, I have this light in me. And, you know, for myself, I feel so great. But this intrusive thought about how my family treated me, it's like something which needs my whole strength to get rid of. It doesn't go by itself. So I really appreciate myself. And I think I compliment people when I am myself feel good. But you may be right. I need to take in more care of people. I really don't have experience in it. So you're right. I need to appreciate myself more and maybe tell myself those things, like that I'm doing good, helping myself and really doing the hard work, showing up, doing the work, and like never giving up, actually, which is honestly hard. I don't want to see it as hard because I just want to keep going, but it's a hard job. I was contacted by a cousin last week from my dad's side who never even contacted me. And she kept telling me like, oh, wow, this is so interesting. How come you from Kazakhstan, from a very seldom like traditional city, how come you made it 2 years? And the way I think she was surprised that I'm not rigid. I'm like open-minded. And she's like, how did you make it? I'm like, well, I just made it by making it. And it's like she could never understand, like, her message was like, with your story, like being like thrown away by both families, dads and moms, you were supposed to like die. And even us having money and resources, not many of us are succeeding, if at all. But how come you made it? I'm like, well, girl, I made it because this is me, because this is what I do.
Because you're smart, you're resilient, you're a fighter.
Thank you.
You're tenacious. You don't give up. You're curious. This is why you're resilience. And so I'm glad that you were able to, you know, turn that appreciation that you showed so lovely of you to show it towards me. Practice saying that to yourself too. And from an I place, not Carly Gash, look at you. Who's talking? I feel good about myself. Go come from an I place. It will.
I feel good about myself.
Yeah. Look at me.
I'm so great.
Look at me.
I'm so great. I'm so smart. I'm so tenacious, so creative. And you come and learn from me how to live this life and how to fight for life, you know. It's not you, Dr. Nina. I'm just talking to someone.
Yes. How are you feeling saying that, making that switch to go from look at you, you're doing great, to hey, look at me, I'm doing great? One is experience distant, one is more within you. How did that feel doing it that way?
It actually feels great. It's just from this healthy place, it feels great. Because I know why I'm scared to this. So when I used to say good things about me and family, I was called selfish, arrogant. They used to say, be careful, queen, your crown is going to fall and you will not have your crown anymore. Sarcastic things like that. So I was always put down for being great. You know what I mean? That's why I'm scared of my own success. Because I'm waiting for a blow or something terrible, or they will ruin something of mine. But I'm like, I'm unlearning this, and I'm learning that it's okay to be successful and own it and like proceed with it, and just own it because it's mine. It's my success. I got it done. I got those jeans. I made it done solely by myself. So I choose to own it, and I choose to be okay with my success and greatness. And even saying so, I'm going to cry.
Hold that in your heart, in your mind, in your body. Hold that thought and practice that this week. Okay? Look forward to hearing how it goes.
Thank you so much. I will. Have a wonderful day, Dr. Nina.
I love you. Carly Gash. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And Ronan tells me that Jenny is here. Hello, Jenny.
Hello.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi. How are you?
I am doing well on this beautiful Wednesday here in LA.
The weather is so nice lately that I'm really dreading the weekend because it's going to be like 100 million degrees again. This nice weather has like brought me joy.
How's your internal temperature? What's going on inside?
I'm having, and I wonder if a lot of people are feeling this way or if it's just me. I always think it's just me, but I mean, it's got to be like a lot of people. I'm having a lot of anxiety and a lot of anxiety. I guess I would call it anxiety. I'm having a lot of worry and anxiety about like the economy starting to open up again. Like this, we just opened like Gavin Newsom opened hair salons again and barbershops, and then the next phase will be like gyms and I got a call for like a small job, a possible small job. It wasn't even like confirmed at the moment I got when I got the call, and I just felt this wave of anxiety just come through me. Because I just see everything that I read and hear, I just feel like, oh no, it's happening again. So They're going to open the economy. There's going to be this huge uptick, and then we're all going to get closed down again. And then I'm going to get COVID, and everyone I know is going to get COVID. And of course, I catastrophize it. And I just don't understand. I don't understand what this rush is to like open the economy, especially before like a giant holiday weekend when you know everyone's going to be out and about. And I don't know. I'm just feeling a lot of anxiety over like the possibility of this just never ending too. You know, it's like, it feels like it's never going to end.
Okay. So I'm hearing two things, Jenny. One is your anxiety, understandable anxiety about opening up the economy. The other is taking it to, but the other part is, as you said, catastrophizing it. So there's the what if, and then there's the really, really bad what if.
Yeah.
And this is a time where you want to stay in what is, which, so what if is fear and anxiety about the future. What is reality about your present. So if you take the economy opening up, yes, it is scary because there are a lot of people that are not taking precautions as they should be. I read that if 95% of Americans wore masks starting today, we could save 65,000 lives by December.
Yeah. So, and I want, you know, you and everyone to know, I'm not a trust fund kid. I'm like living on nothing right now. And I desperately need to work and need the money since I'm not getting the pandemic unemployment has lapsed. I'm literally making $0. It's not like I'm like, oh, I have money and I don't need the economy to reopen. No, I desperately need it to reopen, but I'm scared for it to reopen.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
You and many other people. And I'm not. And so, of course, there's the anxiety. Of course there is, for good reason. But the catastrophic thinking in between anxiety about reopening and the catastrophic thinking of, everything's, everyone you know is going to get COVID and you're going to die, I think is what you said. That's extreme catastrophic thinking versus, okay, let's say the economy is opening. Clearly it is. What can focus on is what things you can do to feel safe given the situation. So for example, your small job that you mentioned, what can you do to feel as safe as you can feel?
I mean, I feel like I can keep myself safe and even my clients safe. It's like the other people that are on set, because I do makeup, and so there's other people there. You know, there's like a crew. And it's a small crew, but, you know, it's just, I don't know. I just feel, because I'm out of control over everyone else. You know what I mean? And it's interesting because they tell everyone to wear masks for other people's safety. And I feel like because Americans don't comprehend that sentiment, that they should actually reword the whole thing. The sentiment needs to be wear a mask to protect yourself, and then everyone will do it. Because no one gives a shit about anybody else. They care about themselves, it seems.
So that's where I'm leaning toward now.
I care about me and the people I love that I see or want to see eventually. And so that's why I'm going to wear a mask. And everyone else, like, fend for yourself, asshole. See, I'm getting angry. This is where I'm at.
Okay, but here's something to think about. On the one hand, there are certainly a lot of people who are not are exactly what you're saying and not thinking that this is real, not thinking that for whatever reason they're not wearing masks. But you're also making it everybody. And last week you talked about these parents that you had to take care of and never having a sense of being taken care of by, never being protected by your parents. And so those are perhaps the original people who were just about themselves and not thinking about you. And is it possible that, yes, there is a reality to what's going on with masks? I know. But is it possible that there's another layer of what's going on, which is that you're re-experiencing that feeling of you're on your own, you have to take care of yourself, and nobody's out there to take care of you?
Yeah, that is very possible that is what's going on.
So for sure.
This whole thing has reignited all of these old, the government right now is like doing to me what my parents did. They've cut me off, you know?
Exactly. And so you're experiencing both the trauma of the present plus the trauma of the past, which intensifies your experience in the present. And one thing that you can do is think about what you can do and be careful of the everybody else. Mm-hmm. Because within this everybody else, which in your mind are all mask-shaming, non-wear-masking, selfish people, they are out there. And they certainly are out there. And then there are a lot of people who are like you, who are wearing masks, who believe in the importance of keeping themselves and others safe, who are doing the right thing. So I would watch today's language day, I guess. I would watch the everybody idea. The everybody idea. Like that everyone else is not to be trusted and selfish, and only you and certain people you know are on the side of right. There are some people who are and some people who aren't. And so the idea would be, okay, if you're on a set, how do you protect yourself against the individuals who are not doing the right thing?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we all have to wear masks. That's not the issue on set. It's just like, the social distancing and the people who pull down their masks and honestly, it's not even that these people mean harm sometimes. It's that they forget. You're in a rush and you forget and you're like, you run out and your mask is underneath your chin and it's like, I don't have control over any of that. And that's another big thing. Like this whole thing has made me realize how out of control I am and how I have to like really just go with the flow and, live a little more, live differently than I'm used to, because I'm used to being, almost in full control of everything. And that's what keeps my anxiety in check, being scheduled and, being in control of what happens around me. And now I've lost a lot of that because I can't control what's happening.
But you can't control your response to it. So let's say you're on the set and you see someone with their mask under their chin. What
so
can you do?
The thing with Dr. Nina, like, okay, so people get so denied when you say something to them as if you're attacking them. Like even people in my apartment complex, which I'm like, oh, your mask slipped down under your nose. They're like, I know, I put it there purposely because I can't breathe, And I'm like, oh my God. Like, so I just am very weary about even going near anybody.
Well, you can say, Hey, look, I feel a little unsafe when people's masks are under their noses. Can you please move it up? And if they're upset at you, oh well, that's you protecting yourself, which you've done too much of that already in your life. But this is a time when you do have control over what you say to someone, what you say to someone who's not following the rules.
And I'm exhausted by doing these things. I'm exhausted by having to like constantly ask, when a job comes in, I'm like, okay, what are the protocols? Why do I have to ask all this stuff? Why isn't this just normal? We can't go back to what it used to be. We are living in a different time. Well, I don't understand why people can't comprehend and just like I just feel exhausted by this whole situation and I want to move somewhere where I don't have to deal with it, but there's nowhere to go.
Unfortunately, yes, I think that it's the state of humanity, and what we're seeing under this incredible duress are the people who are able to see reality and say, yes, this is a significant threat to all of us, all humans on this planet, and we should unite and take care of ourselves and each other. And this should be a time where we come together. And some people are, and some people are going into radical conspiracy theories or denying that denying it. No, the numbers don't mean anything. It's not real, and all of that. Well, it's showing something about humanity, but the reality is both are there. There are the people who are able to protect you and me and themselves and see science and see what's happening and, you know, keep firmly rooted in reality. And then there are those who have a very, let's call it, you know, an alternate view of reality.
Mm-hmm.
They're both there. You have to empower yourself to realize that you can speak up to the onset. You can speak up to someone. And if they're snappy and snide, or if you're in your apartment building and they get an attitude, oh, well, this is your life.
Yeah.
That's your power.
Yeah. I've never been the type to shy away from confrontation, but lately I really feel like I just want to avoid everyone, because everyone is, I don't know, I feel like we haven't united at all. You know,
there's everyone.
What should be. And it's really taken, like, I don't know, it's really, yeah, I have this distrust in humanity because of it. You know, if a global pandemic or, you know, the whole Black Lives Matter movement isn't uniting us as like a people, then what will? You know, I mean, like, the worst of the worst is happening right now. Literally, like, what else can you think about that is any worse than a global pandemic that's killing hundreds of thousands of people? And we're not uniting. Like, it just gives me, like, you know, it's a distrust that I have now for humans.
And that's the problem, that it's become humans and humanity and people rather than some individuals. Some individuals are united, some individuals are, and some aren't. But when it becomes humanity as a whole, that's overwhelming and makes you just want to, go into your apartment probably and close the door and never come out. When it's humanity, but it's certain individuals, it's certain people.
Yeah. You're right, as usual.
Individuals, not humanity.
It's hard for me to, you know, I go through all the stages of like grief, like a death. Like, now I'm in the anger phase. This phone call has put me into the anger phase. And you know, other days, like, someone is very kind and I think, oh, humanity is wonderful, and I'm, you know, and then other days I hate it. I just go back and forth. And I think Carly Gash said that her emotions are, you know, every day or every hour there's a new emotion that springs up, and it's very weird, and it's hard to, you know, intellectually, it's hard to grasp, like, why is this happening? Why do I feel this way? And do other people feel this way? Because I feel very disconnected too, obviously. I think a lot of people probably do, because we all are kind of disconnected in a way, you know?
Well, I talk to a lot of people,
you know.
I talk to a lot of people, and I would say everyone I talk to feels as you do. In terms of emotions, in terms of thoughts about what does this say about humanity, all of that. And so I just want to normalize it. How else can you feel other than a roller coaster of emotions during a pandemic and social unrest and a political situation that's absolutely crazy? Yeah, you're going to have a roller coaster of emotions during this time. That's normal. But be very wary of casting all of humanity as bad. That will cause anxiety and depression and anger. Get mad at the few people who do that, and remember, you can speak up. And remember also that there are a lot of people like you who care.
Sure. Okay, I will keep that in mind.
Okay, Jenny. Well, thank you for calling and sharing your thoughts. I know
you were, Dr. Nina. talk to you hopefully next week.
I hope so too. Bye for now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on LA Talk Radio. You can also listen later on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get podcasts. And I also invite you to go to my website and grab your free 2 chapters of my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. Go to Dr. Nina Inc. That's drninainc.com and grab your free 2 chapters of my book and tell me what you think. Thank you for joining me again. Be safe. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.